Hello, everyone. Jack here with another one. Tim, introduce yourself.
Hello, hello. I'm Tim Schipper. I'm based in the Netherlands. I've been in the games industry for almost a decade. I started my freelance entity in 2016, back at my first game arts and design course. And I did a second one, a bachelor, which I graduated, I think, 2 or 3 years ago now. Time is kind of flying by. But I've been doing, gigs on the side while I was studying still, and kind of adjacent to my final graduation project, I helped release Revita in a lead artist position. And then kind of the whole world opened up after university, and I started doing a bunch more gigs and eventually landed Puckstorm, and I'm now happy and associate lead artist at Puckstorm.
All right,
now we're here.
That's a great summary. You talked about freelancing and then eventually landing a job, right?
Yeah.
So you went about it backwards in a way, right? What usually people do,
yeah.
They find a job and then they go into freelancing.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, I was very, maybe a little too ambitious during my first course. I think it was in my third year, and I was also doing a sprinter version of the course. They call it like a sprinter course here, but it's like you basically cut a year off and then you get like the fourth and third grade curriculum smashed into 1 year. So it was a very tumultuous time, and I just knew that this is what I wanted to do. And I had a friend who was also sprinting, a programmer friend, and he was like, hey, I'm working for this guy, this entrepreneur figure, and he's looking for an artist. Would you be interested in doing a little gig for this guy?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it started. So I needed I needed a freelance entity for that to be able to work with this person. And that kind of kickstarted everything. And we kind of went from there.
How is it in the Netherlands with the laws of freelancing? Like, are you allowed to work, for example, for one entity for a year and not have other clients at the same time? Because that would be higher, basically, right?
Yeah, I think they, and they're starting to really enforce this now in 2025, sorry. You're expected to do work for multiple clients and not stick with like a one sort of provider. I'm working mostly abroad, and there isn't really any other way you can, you know, you need to have a freelance entity. Otherwise, like I'm working with Puckstorm now, who is in Sweden, for example. So there's no other form where I could sit here from my home office and then provide work to studios or individual people abroad. So I guess I get kind of the slip on that, but since that rule got more enforced this year, you see, I think it's like a massive decline of like freelancing people who are like, oh, well, gotta find an actual studio job here in the Netherlands now, because otherwise I'm going to have to do fines.
Oh, so there's like a crackdown on that type of commitment. Interesting. In Austria, it's a bit similar, but I think they've been very strict about this to begin with. But like, what is the limit exactly on how many clients you can have a year? Like, is it a yearly thing? Is it per half a year, or?
I don't think there's like a strict number limit. I think it's more like they start really looking at your earnings before you really have to like ramp up in taxes. There's not a limit that I'm aware of, at least. I don't think I would have even touched upon any limit because it's usually like, it's maybe three individuals a year that I do a small like commission for. I would say I really treat that as a commission, and then there's like continued studio work on the side.
I mean, I'm sorry to go into the legal stuff. Going through some legal
information
right now, so that's why this was interesting. But like, you mentioned a little bit about being a lead artist. Is that like was that your first gig? What were your roles throughout your careers?
Yeah, so when I would really say that the lead art position I got with Revida while I was working together with good friend Ben Starr, it was really like a lead artist light, so to say, because there's a lot of like vision and art that was done by Ben, the programmer himself. He's also a great artist. And there was like a lot of, I got to help a lot with like steering the visuals. So we called it a lead artist position from that perspective. But it was like, you know, we both are pretty young, and I was doing still university on the side as well. Like this was adjacent to literally my graduation project. So by no means a fully fledged lead artist position, but yeah, very much like on board making art, but also helping to pull the strings a little bit on tying the visuals together. So yeah, that was kind of like the first commercial release I helped with. And before that were much more lighter, I would say more along the lines of commissions, or like here's a week of like helping out a studio with some artwork assets.
Got it.
And then cutting ties pretty much. So yeah, I think really after I graduated, it got more like, after Revida really, it's started to, yeah, stepping up in the seriousness and the actually entering the industry. Or that's the way I view it at least.
And so you entered the industry, your commitment there was, 2D artist, or was it an art director? Yeah. Where did you start in that?
So I've really always viewed myself as just a pure 2D artist, especially during my first course when I first started as well. So around 2016, really just artist. And I did have super bare basics in Unity and 3D. Mm-hmm. But along my second course, because I really wanted to do this second course, because I felt like, okay, now I just opened my my freelance entity, and I want to kind of go through the whole mill again in a very structured way. So I think school's great for that. If you're like, I think being self-taught is fantastic, but yeah. I feel like I needed some sort of, I feel like I needed to be put on like, an escalator, or like, I don't know, a trap mill to just go through the whole swing and just be fed information. And I use that kind of like, because I already had the 2D basics, I started focusing more on 3D and tech during the second course.
Yeah.
And with like, while being a bachelor, it was also more focused on research. Like the first course that I did, it's like, I don't know how that translates to English, but it was like a very like practically oriented course, right? Like she was like, here's Photoshop, here's some art basics, and that's kind of it. And then the second bachelor course was really like, okay, you have to like write research papers and reflect on your work and stuff. It was very much more, yeah, researchy or higher, like closer to academic, I would say. Yeah. Really university level.
And
I kind of exited that with, like, how do I say that? My whole graduation project was kind of like, how do I, as someone who views himself as primarily a 2D artist, really show that you can be like multi-discipline, multidisciplinary. And my whole project was kind of about like empowering myself as the artist to do also engine work and programming and visual effects and all that stuff.
Do you get it often where you're being onboarded on a project and they basically almost don't give you a seat for the like the Git or the version control because they just assume you're gonna just be spitting assets?
I think after I graduated, I had two pretty prominent projects. I also worked on ELSI for a good year.
Cool.
cool roguelite game, and there I had access to their, I had a Unity seed and Git access pretty much right away. And I think that's really because of my portfolio, where I was showing like, here's how I, you know, do stuff in Unity. I don't, if I think if I didn't have that, they would have been like, well, you can send over the assets, but we'll do the rest or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally doable too, right? But like, I guess the question here, just to touch on the aspect you were talking about, which is like artists that is mostly doing 2D, and then you went into Engine. What were the first skills that you started teaching yourself that you thought were the most valuable, let's say?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, I think in a general sense, it's and I think that's very, you know, Engine specific, but just getting an understanding of like how hierarchies work. I think that's kind of the first hurdle when you just want to work with like engine stuff. Is like how are my transforms treated, for example, like how do pivots
true,
because that kind of translates like how is my art portrayed on screen, and even with 3D is like there's so many, like you can have such large hierarchies depending on what you're doing. Or like when you're rigging, like getting the work in there just correctly, I guess it's like the first thing that you kind of bump into. I think that's very broad, but yeah, and I guess next is just like kind of like housekeeping, right? You want to have a clean and sensible sort of project folder structure. I'm quite scatterbrained. I'm quite a messy worker. I like to just crank out assets. I'm very a prototype-y worker. I like to phrase it. So it took quite some adjusting to be like, okay, there should definitely be room for the prototypey stuff and working messily and, you know, finding out stuff. I think that's very important.
Yeah.
But you should also be able to clean up after yourself and then really work within a clean structure, because that's, of course, that's respectful to the studio or project environment that you're working in.
That was also a huge lesson to learn for me. I think it's the chaos of the artistic and the creativity, right, that comes in place where you're trying to, like you said, try and figure things out. You're duplicating the same asset maybe 4, 5, 6 times. Kind of a little bit how you duplicate layers, but what ends up happening is you're increasing the project's size maybe, or when you're committing, the programmers are having a really hard time merging your branch with their branch. That's also like a lesson I learned, where you should treat committing on a Git a little bit like save in a game, where you really have to save every change you make. You have to treat it like an autosave. So, but back in the day, I used to have Unity on full screen, right? And I would just work, and at the end of the day, maybe I commit all much. And I put them all together, and that was a huge mistake, because, you know, they would go through each and every thing, and that was like a nightmare for them. So what I started doing is, okay, I'm done with this task. I have literally a window of the Git next to me, and I'm saving that. Right? I save the project, and I go save that, I commit it, and I make a small comment about what that is, even if it's just prototyping. I think this approach had helped me and helped them too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you start learning Engine basics, right? That was what you mentioned. Then a little bit of project structures. Then what were the other tasks that you started playing a little bit with being a 2D artist? Like, which did you find the most valuable? Was it like playing a little bit with the shaders, or being able to implement your assets successfully? What was
the... Yeah, I think with kind of what I stepped into, the first projects that I was doing coming out of university, quickly shifted to small, you know, I do a lot of 2D on like that I posted on Twitter at the time. And I really sort of advertised myself that way, but also have like a big chunk of like, here's like particles that I'm pretty passionate about. And I think like, the first gigs that I was doing was very like tech particle based.
Yeah.
So I kind of combined the two, where it's like, here's some like hand drawn textures that we're trying to make very modular for this this roguelike game. LC, for example, was very yeah, trying to have sort of like what's the word, like flat color, very high res effects in this Pixar game. And the challenge was making that all like scalable, because like you're then starting to touch on like, if you're gonna make a laser, you want to make that laser scalable to the gameplay, right? If there's a value that says, oh, this laser is now this many units long, you need to have that particle effect scale properly. And I think like those kind of things were like the first thing I really started puzzling with, like, okay, I can do, we got the 2D covered, I can make a little simple graphic, but then we're gonna play with the tech of like making everything modular and scalable. And,
exactly, that's what I wanted to touch upon. Yeah, man. That's, yeah, it's exactly that I feel need to be almost taught in the university already, right? Like, you don't need to kind of like wait for the job to teach you that stuff. I feel like there's a responsibility.
I think it's greatly appreciated, like, if you can step in to a company and be like, hey, I can make graphics, but I'm also, you know, confident in processing that myself in Engine. So you kind of keep ownership of what you're putting in terms of art.
Yeah.
And you can manipulate, like, you know how to manipulate it, or how it's being manipulated by gameplay variables even.
Yeah.
I think just that insight.
But, you know, sorry to interrupt. I think a lot of people that maybe that are listening right now and have no idea about coding or are being a little afraid in terms, like, when you mention something like variable. So when you're saying something like a variable, say it is, for example, an effect that goes over the character that maybe spawns another, like, let's say... let's say a very simple example, a character that is in grayscale, but then the colors get swapped from the bottom up. You can't just do that with art. You can do the two assets, right?
Yeah.
But then you need some type of logic that is putting those together. So when you're talking about variables, I'm imagining, with my experience, of course, like, I'm imagining you talking to the tech team, right? And figuring it out in a way.
Yeah.
I don't want the viewers or the listeners now to hear this and maybe think, oh, I need to learn. Oh, I'm an imposter. I'm not even that good. So what's your advice to them?
So I think first and foremost, I guess that's kind of like how, like, where are you in the big scope that is, being a generalist, right? Mm. So there's like different degrees to that, and people are more focused on maybe 2D and 3D, and then that's their generalism, but there's also overlap with programming and tech. And sure. I don't think there's any wrong or right there. So yeah, I think that's good to say up front. For me, it's like, for me, Unity, for example, was something that was taught on my first course even, and is something that I further elaborated on in my second course. And that's something that I kind of made my own, and I wasn't good at it at all at first. Like, I was struggling massively with C#, and it's only because my university taught Python, which I think sucked, but it's because I went through it in such like in a course manner of like, here's lesson one, lesson two, lesson three, and then by the end of that I was like, phew, thank God that's over, because I didn't enjoy that. But then stepping back to C# again made me see things click a lot better, just because of that logic of like, oh, this is kind of like just seeing all the sort of puzzle pieces in its most basic form. Made me view C# coming back to it under a different lens. And I think like trying to tackle that kind of stuff is really about sort of, you kind of just want to dabble and you're like, it can be intimidating at first, and you're not gonna always get everything at first, but it's like just allowing yourself to see things and playing with, well, variables literally, and see how that affects things. Then you might not get that at first, but if you just allow yourself to undergo that, then taking the step back is like, okay, so how do these puzzle pieces work in different contexts? Or I think it's just, it's almost like an exposure therapy, right? Like you're just gonna be seeing more and more patterns sort of emerge the more you touch it. And I think that's really kind of it.
So what do you say when someone is exposed to that too early, right? Like then you have the overwhelming effect of now the team is expecting that from you, right? Would you advocate for, you know, not saying anything and trying it on your own and see how that works? Or would you advocate maybe for something where you're being honest and you're just telling them, you know, I don't know where to start, and would someone point me to the right direction? Maybe it's a blog that you can read or something.
Yeah. So, let me think. So what I would prefer is like, if I, like I have a very basic understanding of programming, and if I were to tackle a task where it's like a bit higher up there, and if I sort of scroll over the code and there's small bits that I get, I always try to sort of approach that with I try to be assertive about it in a way of like, hey, so I see these puzzle pieces, like this and that variable, and can I do this with that? Like literally just ask the programmer, is this something I can do? And then that's usually a question that then prompts an answer of like, oh yeah, this is how you can manipulate that. Right. And otherwise,
I will interrupt a little bit. Sorry. Yeah. I think the way you're also putting the question is like very good in communication, because you're leaving their answers either to option A or B, like yes or no, or you're leaving it to maybe like the way you formulate the question, right? You're giving them, is it A? Can I do it with A or can I do it with B? Kind of like making their answer a little easier, right? It also shows that you thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sort of form of questioning has always been very comfortable to me, because it's immediately sort of engaging in a conversation of I can imagine a response of like, hi Tim, indeed you could do this or that with it. You kind of like inspire to very elaborate answers.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like, not quite, but it does this instead. And if you want to look that up, here's some, you know, source on that. Or, I think funneling your questions in a sort of engaging way is definitely a good way to allow yourself to be fed the right information, right?
And I think this we're going to touch on this later. Like, this is a huge thing to have as a lead artist. But we're going to cover that later. I wanted to ask you a question that I would have loved to be answered like 4 years ago, right? What would you say as an artist is the best thing to learn? Like, it can be very overwhelming to look at Unity and be like, okay, I have no idea what is useful for me and what is not useful for me, right? Like as a 2D artist, for example. So it could be a little bit overwhelming. What would you advise people who are currently, for example, struggling to get to land a job as a concept artist, let's say, to land a job as an illustrator in the games industry, to start learning when it comes to Unity or Unreal? Like, what are the first things to pick up other than the project management and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think what I would do in that position is like, I'm probably like someone who makes characters or makes 2D assets, and these need to be put in game somehow in some rendering form. So what I would do probably is I would look up, I don't know, a Unity tutorial character or like 2D character, and then you're gonna see, like, you're not gonna immediately get everything, but what you're gonna be pulling, you're kind of putting yourself in a position where you will be exposed to a tutorial that's gonna go over like, okay, we're gonna do the programming part. Cool, you can kind of like soak that in, but shelf that. And then there's going to be a part where it's like, here's your sprites, and you're going to put that on a sprite renderer, and this is how you get a visual on screen, right? And I think that would be the first place to sort of start to just expose yourself to that, to just kind of accumulate that information. Because if you can then, if you watch that, you haven't installed Unity yet, and then you can be like, okay, well, I'm going to download Unity, I'm going to boot it up. What did the guy do in the video? Oh, he made an object and then sprite renderer, and then he dragged his sprite on the thing. And then, you know, that's like the very first step, but that then becomes something that you can capture in a GIF capture, and you can post that on your social, or like put that on the portfolio where you're like, hey, well, I got a character on screen and it's showing the first four frames. And it's like that's a starting point that you can, you know, further fletch out to sort of say like, hey, I'm an artist and I got like the very basics down of like just getting a graphic in Unity and trying to learn what all these components can do and help me do. And I think that will also slowly open up the gate to like, okay, but there are all these components in Unity, for example, and I saw little bits of script before, and now we can start looking into like, how does this script communicate with this component? So you can maybe learn about a little script that flips through the frames for you instead of like the Unity animator doing that, or if I press space, then it goes to an animation state, or I don't know. There's obviously 101 ways you could approach things, but I think like just kind of being like, if you're very intimidated by programming, try to look up a tutorial that kind of ties that together with parts that you are interested in or parts that you would know, so you kind of get that bridge. I feel like that still simplifies it, but I feel like that's really sort of the first place where I would want to expose myself.
Honestly, like the more I talk about it with you, the more it seems like it's a language. You know, when you look at like, let's say Chinese or Korean, maybe you're completely intimidated because you don't even know like the alphabet. You don't even know where to start. So when someone tells you like, oh, I can actually read a little bit of Korean, I don't understand what's been said, but I can read it. So you're always like, we're like, people who don't know Korean or don't know how to read Korean, we're always so impressed. Right. Oh my God, you can read this? And I feel like it's a bit like that in terms of game dev a little bit. So say, for example, like learning the word book and how to read the word book is not the same like writing a book, right? So when you're learning, for example, the word sprite sheets in a tutorial that is just showing you in a simple example, like with literally placeholder graphics, what a sprite sheet is. The next time, whatever discipline you're working with, if it's visual effects or if it's shaders, the next time you're going to hear sprites, it's not going to be a code word anymore. You're kind of going to know what a sprite is. And back to the point of when you said that you could like make something and share it, I am on the opposite of that spectrum, but at the same time, I totally get you because I also share all my learning, but I thrive, or I kind of fantasize about me being that person that looks at the tutorial up and makes an example of it at home, like in the engine, but then throws it away completely just to gain the knowledge. You know, I fantasize about that because sometimes I feel like I don't have really the time to stream today. I don't want to stream, so I stop learning. Like, I don't learn at all. So I fantasize about being that person, which a lot of people operate under the same, like, light, right? They just open it up, they try it, or they have a sketchbook that they never show anybody, right?
Oof, yeah, the amount of stuff I made and haven't shown. I mean, it's kind of a tangent, but what I love to do is, like, I'm very into D&D, and I love being a character artist as in my hobby time. So I've always fantasized about making my kind of like my personal interactive D&D sheet, right? So I have a cool character illustration. I open Unity, bam, put that sucker on the screen. And then I'm like, okay, so how do I get all my variable stats sheet from like D&D Beyond, where you would usually go to see all your stats? How do I get that on the screen? And then I need to make that in a way that's like, for me, friendly to interact with, because I don't want to change hard values all the time. If I imagine my actual character levels up, then I have to open my project and then manually tweak all the values again. I don't want to do that. So I want to be like, how do I make this modular in the sense that if I can level up, I can just kind of transfer all the numbers, like make all the stats correct. And that's like a project sort of that I've visited in like three different iterations. And I would have like thrown away, but well, not really thrown away. It's still on my D drive, but it's like, I kind of like took very small micro things and understandings from that. And those have then started surfacing in other projects again, where it's like, for example, I made a little bit of code that communicated to like a text component in Unity. And in that little D&D project, you know, that didn't get anywhere. But now that's something that I can use in another project, right?
Yeah.
So it's always like, and I think really what's probably the most important things for like either self-taught or people coming from university still even is like probably the most important thing is like learning about things that you don't know. Because if you are confident that you are sitting in the spot where you know everything there is to know, like you wouldn't see that, like you see a ceiling, you're like, then you wouldn't keep looking, you know? But if you hear about a term or you see terminology on the screen that is like, what is that? I can't even comprehend right now. But then that's like something you can, that's a keyword you can slam into Google and then you can look into, right? So it's like, it's very important to sort of know what you don't know so that you can keep looking and keep looking at things. And I feel the same way with like every time I have to do something in Unity or in the game engine, or maybe it's even like a rendering topic in art in general. If there's a word that pops up and it's like, well, that's certainly something I don't know about, let's Google it. Let's look into it, because I don't know, right?
That's interesting. Like, but what drives that? Do you think like this? Is it a respect to the platform you're working with, or is it curiosity? Just pure curiosity.
I would say a small part curiosity. I would say for the bigger part, it's like I feel like I want to be like coming out of university, I felt like this industry was kind of scary. And I'm seeing like a lot of like, it's changing rapidly. Like, so I kind of exited school with the mindset of like landing a concept artist position is super duper hard. I have all this sort of like very small beginnings of like technical approaches that I got from school. I better start using that and sort of build on top of it so I can kind of advertise myself as like, hey, I can do 2D, but I can also bring that to engine. And then that kind of evolved into like, well, I can now also, by the time, you know, that sort of developed, I can now also do 3D and I can also bring that to engine. Oh, I can animate. Oh, I can do a little bit of shader work. And I think that's kind of like how I became a generalist, was like very driven by, I think the industry is scary and I definitely want to have a job in this industry. But I want to do that in a very broadly applicable, right? I want to be very multi-seated compatible. But also kind of have that sort of me in all of that. So you have all these different disciplines or seats that I can fill, but I still want to bring that me on it. And like, what's that me part? And I feel like that's also kind of like a journey on its own. But I felt like for me, it's like I've kind of in all my works, so regardless of media, I really like to play with scales, like big versus small. And I really like lighting and composition. And, you know, for both just drawing, but also technical stuff, those are great like topics to explore, right? Because you can do so much in like engine lighting, but also with particles and all that stuff. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. There's a broad fascination that kind of spider webs or cobwebs everything together.
Yeah, it seems like it's been hooked by a lot of motivations. Like one of them is landing a job and being like a little terrorized, right, by the limits.
Yeah, it is scary.
It is scary, right? Like it's so limitless, but at the same time, it's kind of forgiving in some aspects. Because like if you are a 2D artist that knows a little about the other side of games, then that is almost like two cultures that are meeting. And it reminds me kind of when I first came to Europe and I was able to like to speak some German and people were like very enthusiastic about it, right? I think it's generally a nature, like a human nature thing. Like we always are divided, like programmers and art, like now more than ever, even because of the AI and everything, like the generative AI, like mostly programmers are kind of on the side of like pro AI maybe, and the art are completely like anti AI. We see it often. I'm not generalizing, I'm just like my observation, my opinion. And we see that divide it's getting wider and wider. But at the same time, like when you were saying that you're learning small concepts about programming, you're able to not only better your art, but also you're able to work better in a team, like also relate to the others and be like a better person to work with in generally, because before you're going to say an idea, you're going to run it through your filtering of what is possible and what is not possible. And this is going to make it easier for the programmers, for example, to understand what you need from them before you. Yeah, I think that is a huge thing. And like you said, even if you just start with small concepts, like you're motivating me to tinker a little bit, like and not be overwhelmed.
I think that's the big thing, right? I also just have a massive tinker craving, and I think that D&D character sheet was like a good example where it's like, you know, I have so many like older back when, you know, Twitter, so many sort of short videos where I kind of like show a capture of like a proof of concept. There was this one time when I was kind of popping off a little bit on Twitter with like pixel dailies, and I built a community out that, and I was like, I was so like, I appreciate this community that I built around myself so much. I kind of want to, what if I made like a cute little sort of gacha game where you can get little people from the community that we share. So I made like a character base, and I made like people that I knew from my community, and I made like an animation with particles that's like, oh, here's like the review animation. If you pull your cool character, there's like a camera spin and there's like particles and boom, character reveal. And I feel like just showing little things like that, like on a surface level, that's very harmless. Like that's like, oh, this is fun to make and I showed it. But it on the background level shows potential studios so much, because it shows you that you can manipulate camera work, you're working with particles, you're working with character graphics, you're also working with like a grid placement of little entities. So you kind of like have a systematic approach. Maybe it's modular, or you have like a variable that you enter in an array and that then automatically places the character. There's like so many things on the background that you're also showing. And yeah, it's like, it's fun to be able to do these kind of things, because it satisfies my crave of like, hey, I just want to build this because I think it's fun, right? But it's also like, you feel kind of empowered as an artist, because you can make your visuals very interactable looking, And then on that point, you kind of start realizing, and I think I had this with my graduation project, you kind of end up on a point where you're like, well, I'm not actually super far off from just actually making a game.
I mean, that's a huge confidence boost, honestly, like once that happened, I feel.
It is, yeah. But then comes the terror of like actually developing a game alongside a normal job, which is like, you know, that's a different story, but it's fun to be able to do that stuff, right?
Yeah, you almost kind of don't have any life anymore in a way. But yeah. I mean, there's something to be said about just like putting your like every inch of your existence into something. I think it always leads to greatness. But damn it, like when I hear all those stories about burnout and overworking, I feel like I'm on the edge all the time. So it's not like I force myself to take time off, but I value it.
Yeah.
Although everything around me says I shouldn't value it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I had that. Especially during university, where I was like, I had the pressure of school. I had to do stuff for grades to be able to continue what I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was like pass, of course, and learn stuff. But there was also like my Twitter, for example, was really picking up pace at that time. And I'm kind of glad that it's, you know, it's kind of silent down, moving over to Blue Sky now. And everything is, I feel like I really just, in the past 2 or 3 years only, I really sort of landed on a sense where it's like, okay, now I feel kind of healthy. And it's so simple, but it's so difficult at the same time, because it's really like I do my day-to-day job, right? And then I sign off work, and it's like sometimes I feel like drawing, sometimes I feel like playing a game, and I just allow myself to do that. But by God, I think the most important thing remains, like, keep things fun for yourself, because it's so, so extremely killing to whatever it is that you're doing to feel like you have to keep doing that. Like, I used to be in those first 2 years of university when my Twitter was picking up, I felt like I have to do a Pixel Daily every day or I'm not considered relevant or I'm not going to be interesting to this industry anymore.
Yeah.
And right now I'm very grateful that I have a job now, but I have to think realistically about the future, right? I do want to, not necessarily, I'm not sure if competitive is the right word, but you want to keep up on information and you want to show the internet that you accumulate that information so that you do stay relevant to the market. Even in the future lens, like I really want to stay with Puckstorm. Let me say that up front, but gotta be realistic. It's like it's very important to take that time for yourself and get good sleep. And that's something I really neglected during university. I felt a lot of pressure. And yeah, I feel like I like to think that I go about it in a more healthy manner now, and keep things fun. Because if you really don't feel like doing something, like it's important that you kind of overarching stuff, you kind of keep up pace, right? But it's like, do it when you're in a good spot for it, and don't do it when you're absolutely not feeling like it, because then you're just slamming into a wall.
Yeah, I mean, that's that it's mostly that you really want to do it, and it's a lot of fun, and to a level where it's an obsession, and you just don't know where to stop, and like it's difficult to take a break, because you start feeling guilty that you're taking a break, right? I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like systematically wrong the way everything is set up right now. Like one of the main things, right, is it's discussed a lot in the industry. Like, you finish your job and then you're expected to go back and learn more about your job, and it's like, yeah, cool, but like, where does it really end? And how am I supposed to be happy in terms of like my relationship or in terms of my existence, like just as a human, right? It's like everything is circling around job, or circling around your value is what you earn, or your value is what you do to someone else, so you get paid. In your case, for example, you're following on Blue Sky or on Twitter back then. That was the only thing you were doing, I think, for yourself as well, and for the business. Yeah. But
Yeah, I felt like it was a big chunk of like it was my only means to sort of feel validated as an artist. Like, oh, this is good feedback, right? You're like, number goes up, you're doing good. And that combined with like the pressure of like, okay, well, I gotta keep gigs rolling in to be able to pay off my my studies, right? So it's very like that. I think that ramped up pretty quickly.
True. In the Netherlands, education is not free, right?
It's not.
I remember.
It's I mean, I have a hefty student loan that I need to pay off. So there's a lot of pressure coming from that because you try to like as you're studying and you're getting those that sum of money in every month to be able to pay your study, that does become kind of like. You know, that's kind of a kick under the butt to be like, well, study, but also, you know, mitigate that number, because otherwise you're going to have to you're going to have to pay off like a lot in the future, which I do have to do now. I guess it's very situational for everyone. That wasn't absolutely a nice factor to it, I would say. I do think like the pressure really push me in good spots as well, but I'm definitely happy where I am now, where it's like you know, it's a good work and life balance where I'm pretty happy with where I am, I guess is what I want to say. I make good money, I can't complain. I get to be able to do the things I want to do. I guess looking for a house is kind of a struggle right now here in the Netherlands specifically, but
I mean, it's a tough reality to accept, of course. I don't see any positive in it, unless the education was exceptionally good, then I could see that as a huge positive. But like paying for education for me is something I take very like every inch of my existence is against the idea. I do hugely believe in free education for all. But yeah, it's not like we're going to be able to fix it on the podcast right now.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic, because it's so normal here, I guess. Because you kind of like, you have middle school, and then there's like, you have your tutor talk, or like the person who's like orientates you for the next big step in your life. So me and my parents sit there with this guy at the table, and he's like, well, Tim, you're very creative and you're very tech aligned. There's this game arts course over there in the region of Utrecht that you can do. That sounds something that's right up your alley. And then it's like, wow, I love art, I love games. And boom, you're on a course that you pay for. So
yeah,
it's so normal here.
And I wonder if you weren't like paying for that, if it would even exist. You know what I mean? So I don't know, but I think it's great to have the option, regardless if paid or not, honestly.
Yeah. It's got me where I am. And like my second course was definitely like just objectively better, but it also required me to do the first course to align to get up that level. Right. I needed a certain entry level and I knew that's the sort of course that I wanted to take. And I've had some great teachers on there as well, and classes that I absolutely needed. So
yeah,
for me personally, just to be able to, you know, it's kind of a roller coaster where you, as a little incubating artist kid, gets put in the seat. It's like, hey, strap on, you're gonna be sent on a ride, and you're just gonna take all these classes every day. For me, that helped a lot. And but I have a lot of, I've been approached by, you know, self-taught people who are like, how can I even ever compete if I want to be self-taught? And you, for example, did all these classes, Tim, like how I ever going to get on that level? And I think a sort of nice sort of realization to give is like, you can absolutely be self-taught in this industry. Yep. But it's just, it's a healthy realization to have that someone who is on a school does go to classes starting from 8 a.m. to, you know, 4 p.m.
Yeah.
And they change classes. Like they handle different topics like every 1-2 hours. Yeah, that's sort of, you need to be able to know what you need. Like you gotta somehow find all these terminologies, kind of ties back into what we were saying before. You need to learn about words or things that you don't know so that you can then start looking into them. Because it's so long you don't know these words or terminologies, you don't know of their existence, you're not going to learn about it.
And so, yeah, you will encounter them too, like in sense of like, so if they are core words, right? Like, I would like to order water or whatever. Like, that's a sentence that is core. If I have went around learning a language only in what I'm specifically doing, like let's say VFX, real-time VFX, when the terms come, say sprite sheet or skeleton mesh, and I don't know what that means, it's limiting me too, right? It's limiting my the core of what I'm doing or what the team is doing. Say if it is like game, it's a game, you're developing a whole game, then that's going to limit that part. So yeah, I agree with you there. I wanted to ask you about, you know, you mentioned you went to school, you were probably in your 20s, right? Like early 20s. What do you say now for people who are in their mid 40s, maybe early 40s, that have been working their whole life as 2D artists, and now the whole generative AI is coming along, it's getting a little more complicated. Not to be super depressed here, and they're more expected to know about engine work and more maybe about 3D and more techniques and more game dev. What do you suggest them to do?
Yeah, good question. I think first foremost, I think what's super important is for companies where they can to kind of see how they can onboard people. I think I have a really good example at work currently. I have a colleague who's kind of, if you're watching this, kind of say probably butcher it. I think they're in their 40s, but they're kind of from like the Game Boy Advance, like spriting age, right? And they want to do more 3D and engine work right now. And I think I've been sitting with this person to just go over like the engine stuff and really taking the time of like, hey, these were my struggle points going into engine. And I want to go over these with you now so that you're well equipped. I think it's super important for like, if you're onboarding people in like, doesn't matter what age range or what expertise, like there needs to be proper onboarding, and people need to, or studios need to take time to feel like they need to sit with this person and feel like, okay, we as the studio feel like you're now well equipped to properly handle this task. Because I think what's really probably the most terrifying thing is stepping into a studio somewhere where you feel like, okay, I sort of align with this skill set, but neither they confirmed that fully on their end. And I don't know, you know, I want to be able to do that, but and I guess, yeah, I mean, entry tests are there for a reason too, but I feel like there should be healthy growth area. And I feel like we have currently a pretty good balance for that, where we sit with our director and we like talk about like, hey, so Tim, in the next 6 months, what do you want to orientate yourself towards? Like, where do you want to be in the next 6 months? Like skill wise, right? Is there something you want to, are there like soft or hard skills that you would like to find out or play with that we can sort of try and funnel work towards? And there's not always room for that, but you know, just having that conversation makes it so that they can think about aligning that where possible. I think that's very important for studios to consider. And you know, I mean, if you're still in the industry and you're, you know, kicking in the industry in your 40s, so you're probably doing excellent work. You have a massive portfolio and you have your unique style. So I think you're absolutely, you know, a candidate to bring something to the table there. So yeah, keep on rocking, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it is like the thing about this industry is constantly it's a novel industry. It keeps on developing. It keeps on changing. Yeah, and you kind of need to change with it too. Listen, yeah. We're heading into the last 9 minutes, 8 minutes. Is there anything you would like to promote, share with the viewers?
Oof. Check out Puckstore. I think we're doing excellent projects if you're into sandbox games. Mm. If you want to see my art, I do 2D, 3D particle effects, a little bit of Unity. You'll see captures of what I'm dabbling with. Sometimes I'm working on a small game prototype that you'll see me post about. So if you're into all that kind of stuff and you like to see all these disciplines in a very down-to-earth and hopefully healthy manner, you can look me up on Twitter or Blue Sky. My handle is Shipdimmer or Shipya. And yeah, keep on studying, keep things fun so you keep on doing them. I guess those are my biggest messages.
Awesome. I will leave all of this in the description below, definitely. Listen, this has been absolutely fantastic to have you on and to have the conversation. Very eye-opening and motivational also for me.
I'm glad. Thank you.
Because like I'm hitting that threshold right now where I'm like, maybe I should get into programming even more than before. And yeah, your attitude and is great to have this tinkering mindset, I think, is not attitude but mindset. Excuse my language. All right, everyone, have a great one, and I'll see you very soon. Bye bye, everybody.